Well, yeah, okay. I guess that doesn't. You know what? iPhone can be an iPhone. Doesn't bother me. What bothers me? Well, actually, it shouldn't bother me. What they are doing, I think, is they are by basically turning the MacBooks into iPads with keyboards welded onto them, they are going to lose a lot of people who actually like to have a computer rather than an oversized iPhone. And I think that's good for us. We will ever.
I think it depends. Like what's the use case of the people that use these devices? Because I mean, I knew a lot when I lived in the U.S. and I used to work for a big university. A lot of the students would buy a Mac and they would just use it as, you know, word processor, like nothing fancy. They would just like the fact that it's a nice screen and a nice keyboard and a nice so those kind of people wouldn't even tell the difference between an ARM processor and
But for that you can already get an iPad, and you're gonna if you want to stick with the Apple thing, and you're gonna save yourself a lot of money, because the Mac Pros or MacBooks, they are extremely expensive.
The way Mac OS works is a bit. You still have like more, you know, apps can run in the background. It's not as limited as iOS. the interface is different, and I guess some people like that. Otherwise, as you said, they would just buy an iPad.
I guess. Well, anyway, I there is something to Apple that like. Many people like to spend a lot of money on their stuff, and it can't be just pretentiousness or social status, because I know a lot of these people, and they have brains, right? So there is something they must be doing right. Also, I don't like the Android comparison to iOS. That's because, Android is many, many things. iOS is this one thing, and Android is depending on every manufacturer. And there was something floating, was it on our chat when somebody posted, if you have the iPhone 6 or 6S is getting iOS 14. That's like if Samsung Galaxy S6 was getting Android 11, which is not gonna ever happen. So you have with these things, you have different. I don't even know where I'm getting with this. It's all bullshit anyway. An iPhone for 1500 quid or whatever it costs. I mean, yeah, I'm never gonna buy that even if I wanted one.
I know a person who actually bought the iPhone X or XS or whatever it is, the $2,000 one. Like, I know a person who used money to buy that, used their own money.
And if you pay that much money, then it makes sense that it will keep updating it for a long time.
What does that phone do for $2,000 that my €600 OnePlus doesn't do?
it'll be an amazing experience, and they'll get all the updates until it's your iPhone is 2 years old, and then they'll underclock the CPU.
The battery's still going to be dog shit in 18 months anyway. Like,
there's plenty of old iPhones around with people, but before COVID, when you actually could see other people, there was plenty of people still wielding those old iPhone 5 or 5S or whatever, you know. And I like, whatever, they are both pretty, like, no phone that I know of is worth more than 700 quid, and even that is a stretch, at least to me. Like, that's my personal preference, right? Spending more than double on a phone is just incredible to me.
So you're not going to get a Librem 5 USA edition then?
No. That's an exception, obviously. I want 20 of those. I'm just waiting for them to be able to actually produce them.
You should spend 2 weeks' wages on a phone and 4 weeks' wages on a computer.
Yeah,
that's my motto in life.
Yeah, that's even worse. Like, if
that's my code, you know, that's the minimum not the minimum, but the optimal amount of money to spend to get a decent device in your price range.
If I think phones are expensive, I think diamonds are worthless. They're just, yeah.
I think it's sad that it seems like that there's no, it seems like there's no genuine, you know, development or because it seems like that the major, like Apple and Google kind of copy from each other and it kind of blends in and eventually it will probably be the same thing. There's nothing is really, you know, unique and new anymore.
Well, I kind of like the wouldn't buy one because why would I want a book-like phone? But I like the engineering behind the hinges because the problem they are trying to solve is interesting. How to make basically a glass fold. And that's, I wouldn't spend $2,000 on a foldable phone or even $1,000 or something. But still, I like looking, watching the progress in that. In software, I think you are right. There's nothing happening in there. You know, they put a bit more AI in the camera, so now you look a little bit more airbrushed. Wow. But,
sexy mode.
Yeah. Or they put 108 megapixels in a camera so that now you can take a photo and basically cover a high riser with it. Awesome. But yeah, there is always some progress that has to be, otherwise people will stop paying and then the whole thing will collapse, maybe.
Anyway. I really don't like how that Android is creating this scope storage, kind of copying stuff from Apple, limiting your access to, like, so file managers can only access like a few unique folders, like your camera and a few other things, and kind of taking away the freedom that Android has.
Yeah. Well, luckily, there's always few B-ports.
So, Dementor, the reason why you're here, the reason why you're on this podcast, so we can interrogate you with loads of questions.
Oh, yeah, that PowerShell thing.
Shoot.
So, what is PowerShell in a nutshell? I didn't even mean to say that.
So, PowerShell is a shell just like Bash or Fish or a few other
ZSH.
ZSH, I was going to say.
That is built on .NET. Originally it was only for Windows, but since then it's been made cross platform. So it's a shell and a scripting language kind of meshed together. So you could use it as a regular shell, and you can also script stuff in it, and you can also build UIs. You can do a lot of different cool and interesting things. And because it's built on .NET, you also have access to a lot of stuff that is available for .NET. So you can use .NET objects in PowerShell. And one of the coolest things I think about it is that it's if Bash on Linux is a lot of things are text based. So when you run a command, the output you get is text. And then, for example, if you want to get information from it or stuff like that, you have to parse the text, to extract things from the text. In PowerShell, everything is an object because it's an object-oriented shell. So when you run certain commands, you get objects back, and then it's a lot easier to... So these objects have properties based on their object type. And for example, like if you run a command called get date, then you get the date, but you get an object. It has an object type of a date. So then you can, if you put in a variable, then you can call that variable and do add days and add a number. And because it's an object type date, the PowerShell automatically knows that it has properties of a date, and it will allow you to do stuff like add days, add minutes, format it in a certain way. And it's a lot easier to interact because you're not interacting with a string, you're interacting with an object.
So how do you pipe that then?
So it also supports piping. So the object will get piped from one side of the pipe to obviously to the other side. And then you can, so you can, for example, you have a command that's similar to ls, it's called get child item. So if you do get child item, you get the content of a directory. And then you can either, so if you pipe it, you can pipe it to something like sort, which will to sort object, which will sort it based on the properties that the object has. So you can sort it by date, by name, you can filter it. You can select only like certain tabs that you want. And unlike Bash, so Bash is the shell, but then you have all kinds of Linux commands like ls or awk or sed or stuff like that. PowerShell was kind of designed with this, like the shell and its command were designed, it has a very specific design language. So everything that gets you information starts with get hyphen. So you have like get hyphen date, get hyphen child item, or get hyphen item. All these commands are, so if it starts with get, you know that that you're getting some information, and if you use new, it's usually to create something. A lot of the commands are built from a verb and a noun, so it's very easy. Sometimes people come to me and they're like, oh, we have this Bash script, we want to convert it to PowerShell, and it's not very, especially if you're new or you don't know how to script or you don't know the how to use a command line, PowerShell is much easier to learn because and it's one of the reasons why a lot of senior sysadmins and people are versed in the shell don't like PowerShell, because it's the commands are longer, but they're easier, they're designed that way because they're easier to understand what they do.
Yeah, let's circle back and reverse a little bit. Mm-hmm. We called you the PowerShell on Linux guy because you have PowerShell on Linux.com, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's a website that, what is it, like a forum or a wiki?
It's all of the above. It's just a website I created to, so it has a little bit of my Twitter feed. It has my favorite link to my favorite modules of PowerShell. So PowerShell has like extensions. They're called modules that give it like more power, more commands that it enhance the shell's ability. So it's kind of like I felt that PowerShell. I use PowerShell on Linux every day, and I felt that sometimes like information was lacking, and that's why I kind of started it. And stuff that I use and I find interesting, like I'll put up there.
So is there like an entire community around this?
So I created the Telegram community for PowerShell on Linux. And the reason I created it originally is because obviously because PowerShell is based a Microsoft technology. Now it's open sourced under the MIT license, but there's a lot of people that I've been called a lot of names because you're like a Microsoft shill and stuff like that, even though I don't work for Microsoft and I really couldn't care less. So that's why I created the Telegram group and the site. So people that are interested in Linux, but they're also interested in PowerShell, or they want to learn, they tried Bash, they didn't like it, but they still want to dab in the command line and learn. That's like a safe place for them to kind of talk both PowerShell and Linux. And I mean, we had people there come and asking us like, oh, I have this Bash script, I'm trying to figure out what it does, and It's really nice. Like, it's kind of like a safe place. Nobody's going to call you like a Microsoft shill in there, or if you like, and if you like Python, that's all right. If you like Bash, that's all right. Like, whatever. But if it's kind of like a community, if you want to learn something else, if you tried, we're there for you to you know.
Did you first start using it on Linux or on Windows?
So I first started using it on Windows, back like, I don't know, 7-8 years ago. I was a sysadmin for a big US insurance company, and Windows was very, before PowerShell, Windows was really bad as far as like automation and scripting and stuff like that. So the reason I started learning PowerShell is because I had to create a lot of users in Active Directory, and it used to take me like 3 or 4 days creating, you know, like 50 users, and then some of these users would have to pass a certain exam that would qualify them to sell insurance, and then a bunch of them didn't pass, and then I had to like delete all the users that I created, which was really sad because I would spend a bunch of time doing something and then I had to like delete all that work, and a lot of that was GUI based. So I was looking for ways to automate stuff, that kind of stuff, and so I learned PowerShell doing that, but I was also a Linux admin, and then I personally like it more than I like Bash, and I find it easier to do things than in Bash. So that way I have, so if I have to knock out, do something quick, then I can easily do it and in PowerShell, because PowerShell has a lot of commands they call it commandlets, to convert. Like, for example, you can take one type of object and save it into like a CSV file, just pipe it to export CSV, and you just get whatever object you had in a CSV file. It's very easy to convert between, to import like, I don't know, a JSON file, do something with it. And it has like a lot of these functionality out of the box, and I don't have to install additional tools to get all this fun stuff.
So to ask you a kind of a bit of a newbie question, but
sure.
would you have your regular terminal for other purposes as well, or can you do everything in PowerShell? Like, PowerShell aware of what operating system it's running on? Like, can you do your updates and your apt installs and whatever and whatnot, or do you leave all that over to your regular terminal, and then anytime you want to interact with PowerShell, you open up PowerShell specifically?
Yeah, so PowerShell on Linux acts just like any other terminal, any other shell. So you can set it as your default shell, which is what I have. So when I open a terminal window, I'm automatically in PowerShell. And PowerShell plays very nice on Linux. So I have access to all my PowerShell commands, and I also have access to all my my Unix, you know, Linux commands. So I can run ls and it will run the Linux ls, not PowerShell. Or and you can even interchange, so I can, as to your question, yeah, I can do sudo apt install, you know, update or whatever, and it will update. So I have access to all my Linux commands and PowerShell, and I can also marry them together. So like a while back, for Jason Evangelos' podcast, the Linux for Everyone podcast, so I used Whois, which is a utility to check the information on a domain, and I saw that the domain for Linux for Everyone is going to expire in X amount of days. So I created a PowerShell script that runs like every hour or something like that, and it would use Whois to get the information about the domain, pipe it into a like put it in a variable, and then I would check the information and on when it's gonna, you know, expire, and I would have it send like a notification to my phone about when it's expiring and stuff like that. So eventually I bought it for him as a birthday gift. I bought him the Linux for Everyone domain.
But, oh, wow. Well done.
Nice.
But,
nice gesture.
Yeah, so that was like PowerShell playing with, you know, with regular Linux commands. So whois is a very, you know, is a tool you install. And they can play very nicely together. So that's the what I like about PowerShell is that I don't have to compromise. Like, I have access to all my Linux stuff, and I also have access to the PowerShell commandlets, and I also have access to .NET. So, for example, not too long ago, and I had to write some something that watches new file creations in a directory on a Red Hat server. So I'm just I just use .NET has like a function to watch, for a better word, to watch like a directory, and then it gives every time a new file is created, it creates this event, and then you can very easily create like a PowerShell script that does something every time like a new file is created, and you can do whatever you want. Like, and for example, you can get information from somewhere, and then you can use like wget to download the file, or YouTube DL. So in the past, I wrote like a tool that I give it an RSS feed, and it would just download like archive a podcast in like three lines. You can have like a PowerShell podcast downloader.
That's really cool. I'm typing at it as you speak. And one thing, so just some beginner tips. Basically, I'm hitting arrow up or control P, and it's not getting me my history of previously inserted commands. How do I fix that?
Are you pressing what?
So in ZSH, well, okay, so in Bash, if you hit arrow mm-hmm. up, you get you cycle through your history, right? You get if you type ls and then hit enter and then you tap w, you get mm-hmm. something. So in PowerShell, this is not happening for me for some reason.
Interesting, because like when I press up, I get the previous command. How did you install it? Did you install like
AUR?
A snap or AUR?
Maybe it doesn't have a dot file. Yeah.
I think
like a history thing.
I think
maybe the history is empty. Did you run like a few commands and then you can also do?
I did.
You can also do the arrow up and down should work unless it's some weird bug.
Right,
you hear him, Mike, you did it wrong. Okay.
Yeah, that's possible. I'm used to, because in ZSH, obviously superior shell and all that. You get Vim keybind.
I think you said fish wrong.
Yeah. No, in ZSH, and I'm sure in other lesser shells, you can use Vim keybinding. So I actually don't usually use arrow up. I use the K. JK, you know, these letters. Is it possible to do in PowerShell as well to have nicer working environment by using Vim shortcuts?
I personally never use the Vim key binding, but it's a good question. My guess is that it's possible because a lot of the stuff in the shell is configurable, but I can't tell you 100% if it's possible. But in the Telegram group, the PowerShell Linux Telegram group, there's some developers, like PowerShell developers that work on PowerShell, and maybe they would know. But you also can type get hyphen history. It will give you like the history of the command you typed. And then you can do like all kinds of cool stuff by piping that to other commands.
Just as a counterpoint to Mike's Vim, do you mm-hmm. Use a graphical text editor like me?
Do I use a graph? I use both. I use it as a shell, but I also use VS Code to work on stuff that's a little bit more complex.
I've recently heard about VS Codeium, so I've been curious to check that out as well.
VS Code is cool. Like, I use it for a lot of things. Like, I just use it even just as a basic note-taking app at work. Like,
oh yeah,
it has support for VS Code has support for so many different extensions. Like, you can install an extension and edit YAML files or JSON or Python or Markdown or whatever you want. Like, it can do it, and it has like a really cool functionality that allows you to edit to work on remote servers via SSH. So, like, for example, I have it. The PowerShell on Linux website runs in on Droplet in DigitalOcean, so I just edit the code using VS Code. I just use the VS Code remote capability, and I can just edit files on the Droplet as if they were local, all cool. via SSH.
With back to like PowerShell, so mm-hmm. I assume PowerShell has scripts, right? Like you write PowerShell scripts like you would write a Bash script or a SSH script.
Mm-hmm.
And if I write a Bash script that works on Linux, will it also work on Windows?
For the most part, it will. There's the Windows version of PowerShell. They're still in the for Windows. They're still in the process of getting rid of the Windows version of PowerShell, and since PowerShell 7, they're almost 100% the same. So most of the stuff will work unless you use certain things that are like using .NET objects that are only available on the Windows PowerShell. But if you write it for the PowerShell 7 and you have PowerShell 7 installed on your Windows box, everything should work, unless there's like some unique cases that we find here and there and they're getting ironed out. Another cool thing that PowerShell allows you to do is that it has this remoting capability. So you can use PowerShell remoting to connect to another machine that has PowerShell installed on it. In Linux it uses SSH, and so if you remote to like between Linux boxes, use SSH in the backend. You can also remote to Windows boxes, and that uses the WinRM backend, and it allows you to quite easily manage Windows boxes from your Linux machine. So it's very useful to kind of stay, you know, like as a sysadmin, you can stay in Linux, you can run your workstation in Linux, but it gives you like this amazing capability to manage Windows servers.
You said before that it allows you to make like user interfaces. Is it something like Zenity, or is it a bit more advanced?
So Zenity,
or like, you know, Kdialog, or basically, so Zenity is a little thing that you can call in. It's, I think it's part of the GTK project, but mm-hmm. you can write a script that will basically pop in a dialog window, or, you know, if you want a script with some rudimentary UI elements, like you want to display something in a window, or you want some user input with that, so you will pop you a little modal with a text field in it or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So there's a module called PS Avalonia, which is Avalonia is this cross-platform GUI toolkit. So using that, you can create GUI applications, or GUI interfaces, I should say, that PowerShell creates, and then the user can enter information, and then it will break that information back to the script, and then we'll do something with it. Depends on how you write the code. And there's also like the PowerShell on Linux website is a GUI that runs on PowerShell. Oh, it's built nice. In PowerShell. And then it's using a module called Universal Dashboard. And that's it has like two editions. One is a community open source edition. Another one is like a paid version that has some more features. But so you can create the GUI that way. You can create and there's another project that takes that dashboard and puts it in the, kind of like an Electron app. So you can write the GUI in that and then have it presented in an Electron app. There's so it gives you like a lot of avenues to attack the same problem depending on what you're more comfortable with. Mm-hmm. Microsoft has this this module that you can install. It's called Outgrid View. I'm blanking on the name of the command is outgrid view, but I'm blanking on the name for the module for the Linux version of it, that the version that supports Linux. But it allows you to create like this almost like a table based on the input that you send from the pipe. So for example, if you get a list of files, then you can use the outgrid to pipe it to outgrid view with the pass through parameter, and then it will create a GUI where the user can pick from that file, like from the file list, from and once they pick it and they click OK, it pushes it back to the pipeline. So you can create like a, you don't really have to create a GUI if you want the user to be able to pick between like different elements. And create like a scripting stuff. And another really cool module that are you guys familiar with Selenium at all?
Yes, I am. It's basically scripting a browser to visit websites automatically.
Yeah, so there's a module for PowerShell it's called Selenium. I ported that module to Linux, so it supports. So now it also supports Linux. So you can install that module, and then you can do like start SE Chrome, and then it will start a Chrome browser, or you could do start SE Firefox, and it will start the Firefox browser, and then you can use code. You can use PowerShell code to drive that browser, like tell it to go to this URL. Or find this link and press on it. And there's this module is open source, and there's like examples in the GitHub repository on how to use it. So it's very easily, like you don't have to know much about, like you don't have to know Selenium, you don't have to know like all this fancy stuff, like the complicated stuff. So that's one thing. That's one of the things I really like about PowerShell. You can very easily like hit the ground running. If you don't have experience with scripting, or you don't have experience in automation, you can just the commands are very, like once you figure out the syntax, it's very easy to know what everything does. And you can use tools like Selenium to like I use it to automate something that's has no way to automate, because like paying your, I don't know, electricity bill. Oh. You can have it go open the browser, go to the thing, enter your credentials, and do everything for you.
You are setting up yourself for a, you know, when your electricity company changes the UI a little bit, it won't know, your script won't know what it's clicking on.
Yeah, obviously. Mm-hmm. But it's not perfect, but it allows you to automate stuff that's, you know, doesn't have an API or doesn't have a...
So how do people get started? Obviously, it's in the repos, isn't it?
The PowerShell, you mean?
Yes.
So the easiest way to install it is probably the snap. So you do sudo snap install PowerShell.
Unless you're on Linux Mint.
Yeah. There, you can also go to the GitHub repository and find like the devs, RPMs, you name it, like Microsoft has all of that stuff. If you don't, if you have any problems and stuff, you could go to the Telegram group, the Partial Linux Telegram group. There's a link on the Partial Linux website, and people there will be happy to help you like get started. And yeah, and then if there's a there's a nice quote that I like, it goes, "Those who don't automate are doomed to repeat themselves." So if you find yourself like doing the certain thing, the same thing over and over again, and you kind of want to get out of, and you could use, I mean, you could use, my wife is a teacher, and I use PowerShell to help her like automate certain like teaching things. So, I mean, anything is possible if you just kind of, you know, think about it in the right way and think what you can do. So, if possible, I would be happy to try and help people on their kind of automation journey. And it's a lot of stuff that you can use to get a job later on. I personally feel like PowerShell completely changed my career. I was kind of like a sysadmin, and now I'm a DevOps engineer, and it enables me to do so many great things that, and I think a lot of people say that. Also the, Jeffrey Snover, which is kind of like the father of PowerShell. He was the guy who created the main concept of it. Said that like if you invest in PowerShell, we'll make sure you don't regret it. And what it kind of is the truth, because now with PowerShell runs on, you know, you can run Azure function, you can run, you know, in AWS, you can run like Lambda functions using PowerShell. You can, it runs on everything, in Docker, on servers. It allows you to manage so many things without needing to know the specific thing. Like you can manage FreeNAS server by installing a FreeNAS module and use PowerShell to configure FreeNAS without knowing FreeNAS. You know PowerShell, you know how PowerShell works, you know kind of like the commands, and you can use that to configure FreeNAS or configure something else like a firewall, other stuff that has modules for it. So it's like it's a very good thing. Like you learn a little bit and you can do a lot with it.
That sounds genuinely cool. I would say my usual thing when people wow me with their enthusiasm for a project, I'm like, yeah, okay, I'm going to try that. Yeah. But I usually never do. But but it does genuinely sound interesting. And, you know, obviously cross-platform stuff and stuff that can be, you know, where you only need to learn one thing and then you know lots of other things automatically. That's pretty cool. I always like tools like that. I think we've been chatting for quite some time today. So thanks so much for the conversation and being here and all the other stuff. It was actually super cool having you on.
It's my pleasure.
DM or Dementor or Apple. So do you want to give any shout outs before we get into the wrap up of the episode?
No, I already mentioned like all the places you can find all that stuff. So I just want to thank you guys for, you know, having me and giving me the opportunity to talk about this thing I'm super excited about.
No worries. And as we all know, you're pretty active in our Telegram chat, so you'll always find him there if you have any questions. Which leads me smoothly, segueingly to the socials. So you can find us on Telegram, as I just said, linuxlads.com/telegram. You can also find us on Twitter @linuxlads. You can email us show@linuxlads.com. You can get us on Mastodon, linuxlads.com/mastodon. If you want to maybe throw us a few bucks, if you like the podcast, you can buy us a beer or a coffee at linuxlads.com/donate/support/beer. Not all of those in one go. That's an exclusive or, you know.
Unless you want to. I mean, we'll accept three donations from the one person.
If you want to go to all three URLs and donate on each one of them, that's your business. as usual, thanks for joining us. Quite a mammoth episode. So, you know, who knows? We might have an extra one next week. Without further ado, I've been Shane.
I've been Connor.
I've been Mike.
And I've been DM.
See ya.
Bye, guys.
Bye.